Rishis must be dedicated to Yom HaTzmaut. So I thought we would divide it up really into two, or perhaps even three distinct parts. But first we just give a general overview in terms of Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, the significance of Eretz Yisrael from the vantage point of Halacha, how some of it plays out in the Ma'is Ad HaYom HaZeh, and then speak a little bit more in terms of Halacha slash history, in terms of a little bit of a, put things into a Halachic perspective, as what the significance of Yom HaTzmaut is all about. So in terms of Eretz Yisrael, we know the term that we use very often, mitzvah satvuyos ba'aretz. There is a halachic concept, certain mitzvahs that are limited only to fulfillment in Eretz Yisrael. The Mishnah tells us in the Masechta Kedushin that generally mitzvahs haguf, mitzvahs which involve a person's body, such as tefillin, Shabbos, kashrus, so there really is no difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz in terms of those mitzvahs, at least in the halachic sense. Whereas mitzvahs which are agriculturally based, which are land-based, so those mitzvahs only apply in Eretz Yisrael, do not apply in Chutz La'aretz. Some of the obvious examples of those mitzvahs are Trumos, and Maisros, and Shemitah, if I remember correctly, and a few others, Lekachich and Peah, an assortment of mitzvahs that only apply in Eretz Yisrael, do not apply in Chutz La'aretz. In order for these mitzvahs to apply, not only do we insist that the area be what's called geographically Eretz Yisrael, but it has to be halachically kaddish b'kedushas Eretz Yisrael. But that means this follows. The Gemara explains to us that when Klal Yisrael entered into Eretz Yisrael the first time around, in the days of Yeshua ben Nun, so by conquering Eretz Yisrael, they were the kaddish Eretz Yisrael. They declared it to be kaddish, and it was at that time in history when the mitzvah of Luis Baruch began. In fact, the Gemara explains that it wasn't just the actual walking into Eretz Yisrael, but it was the 7 years that it took them to actually conquer it. Then the 7 years took them to divide it properly amongst the different Shvatim. After those first 14 years, that's when the Mitzvah Tluyos Ba'aretz for the most part began. Trumas Maisers, that's when the first Shemitah count began. That's when they started counting Shemitah, and they started counting towards Yovel, 14 years after they entered into Eretz Yisrael. Throughout the period of Bayis Rishon, so all the Mitzvah Tluyos Ba'aretz applied Min HaTorah. And then the question became, after the Churban, once the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, when the Golos and Klal Yisrael, at least for the most part, were thrown out of Eretz Yisrael, it was a small remnant, but for the most part, the Jewish people was exiled to Bavel. So at that point, did the mitzvahs of Tluyos Ba'aretz cease to exist or not? So this is the Machlokes in the Gemara, and we generally assume that, yes, that at that point, the mitzvahs of Tluyos Ba'aretz no longer apply, at least on the level of D'oraisa, at least according to Torah law. Yeah, mid Rabbanon, perhaps, they applied, but mid HaTorah, at the time of Churban, so the mitzvahs of Tluyos Ba'aretz do not apply. Then the days of Ezra, the days of the beginning of Ba'asheni, they re-entered into Eretz Yisrael. It was a little bit different. It wasn't actually a military conquest. For the overwhelming majority of the time of Ba'asheni, so the Jewish people were not under their own, they were not autonomous. They were under first the Persians, and then a little bit later the Greeks, and then the Romans. There was a short period of time when, after the events of Hanukkah, for a couple of generations, where there was a Jewish kingdom, but for the most part it was under the non-Jewish rule. But Afal Pichein, the Gemara tells us that the mitzvahs of Tluyos Ba'aretz, at least Kedushas Ha'aretz, came back. And now the question became, do the mitzvahs of Tluyos Ba'aretz come back in full force in the days of Ba'asheni or not? So this was a big machlokes in Rishonim. The Rambam's suggestion was, the Rambam's chiddush was, that even though the Jewish people were back in Eretz Yisrael, but since they weren't back on Mas, they weren't what's called Bias Kulchem, it was a small percentage of Klal Yisrael that actually came back to Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, the Rambam maintains that the mitzvah of Tluyos Ba'aretz did not apply Min HaTorah in the days of Ba'asheni. Others disagree with the Rambam. Then after the second Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, so the question became once again, do we say that the Kedushas Ha'aretz is B'Tela just as it was in the days of Bayis Rishon? Or perhaps there's a difference between Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni? Again, this was also Machlokes of Rishonim. When all the dust settles and all these different issues, these different permutations, halachic slash historical issues, there are many, many different opinions, the halacha today, what exactly is the status of Trumas and Maisris and Shemitah and Mitzvah Tluyos Ba'aretz? There are some who maintain that all of these are Min HaTorah today, that it doesn't matter whether the Rajah is living there, not just living there, most of the Klai Yisrael living there, everything is Min Daraisiv is Manazeh. And many opinions maintain that the mitzvahs of Tluyos Ba'aretz, Trumas, Mais, and Shemitah, for a variety of reasons, are only Min Darabbanan is Manazeh. That's what we generally assume halacha. We generally paskin for a variety of reasons that Trumas and Maisros and Shemitah are only Min Darabbanan is Manazeh. It doesn't mean we don't have to be careful about them, it doesn't mean we don't have to observe them. But they're considered to be somewhat of a lower level of obligation than they were in the good old days. In fact, without going into the details about the Hetter Mechira, the Shemitah controversy, much of the Shemitah controversy revolves around the fact that Shemitah Bezman Hazeh is probably Midrabanan. If it's probably Midrabanan, then there may be a possibility for certain kulas in terms of selling the land to a non-Jew. I'm not saying it is good or it's no good, but the issue only begins, the discussion only starts, working with that assumption that the mitzvah of Tlus Baritz is basically Midrabanan today. The Ramban in the beginning of Masechas Gittin, and this is elaborated upon much more by the Chassam Sofer, one of his tshuvas, is quick to point out that when we discuss the Kedushas Haaretz in terms of mitzvahs of Tlus Baritz, a Shemitah Deraisa today, is tshuvas and Maisas Deraisa today, or Leket Shechum Peah, those parts that you have to take off on your field to give to the Anim, is that Deraisa today? All of these discussions revolve around Kedushas Haaretz in the sense of agricultural Kedusha. This discussion in no way impacts upon the significance of Eretz Yisrael Bezman Hazeh. Chassam Sofer brings a proof for this. Chassam Sofer says, in the days of the Avos, in the days of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, there was no Kedushas Haaretz agriculturally. The mitzvahs of Tlus Baritz, we said, only began after they entered into Eretz Yisrael. So in the days of the Avos, there was no agricultural significance to Eretz Yisrael, yet it was still a significant place. Proof positive, Rav Shmuel told Avraham to live there. Proof positive, Yitzchak wouldn't leave there. Rav Shmuel wouldn't let Yitzchak leave there. Yaakov came back to live there. So Yosef wanted to go back. Everybody wanted to be in Eretz Yisrael. So clearly you see from here that Eretz Yisrael was significant, even out of the context of a formal Kedusha, so in the sense of agricultural Kedusha. So no matter how you, whatever your stand is on Trumas and Maistin and Shemitah, Bizman Hazeh, that doesn't detract from the significance of Eretz Yisrael being the Mokom HaShchinah, being the Eretz HaNivcheres, the land that was chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give to Klal Yisrael, Zorach HaTenes Eretz Hazos. How you paskin on the particular nuances and details of Trumas and Maistin doesn't really impact on that Shaila at all. The Chassam Sofer writes in a similar vein, he writes that there is a machlokas in the Rishonim about the significance of Yerushalayim Bizman Hazeh. The same way that the Gemara discusses when the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael agriculturally disappears once there's a Chorban, so the similar issue is raised about Kedushas Yerushalayim and Kedushas HaMikdash. Let's say Kedushas HaMikdash Bizman Hazeh. So in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, so the Makom HaMikdash had a special level of Kedusha to it, to such an extent that a person who was Tomei was not permitted to enter onto the Har HaBayis, or enter onto the Makom HaMikdash. If a person walked into certain parts of the Makom HaMikdash in the state of Tumah, he would be Chayev Kares. So there is a machlokes in the Rishon whether that halacha applies Bizman Hazeh. So the Rambam's opinion happens to be that Kedushas HaMikdash is in full force Bizman Hazeh, just as in the time of Bayis Rishon, of Bayis Sheni, if a person was Tomei, walked onto the Makom HaMikdash, he would be Chayev Kares. So the Rambam maintains the same position is true today. And the Ravid disagrees. The Ravid says that if a person would walk onto the Makom HaMikdash today, he would not be Chayev Kares. The Ravid doesn't say you're allowed, it was unclear what the Ravid's opinion is, whether it's actually Mutla Chatchila, but one would not be Chayev Kares. This is, of course, part of the major controversy that's still raging today about is it appropriate for somebody to be walking onto the Har HaBayis today? The question being, just from a pure halakhic point of view, is that we assume we're all Tomei, Bizman Hazeh. Anyone who ever went to a funeral, went to a cemetery, is by definition considered to be Tomei. Anyone who's ever been in Chutz La'aretz is by definition Tomei, so that means anybody here is by definition Tomei, because at least Midrabanan, the Gemara says that the Chamim declared, since we don't know where there are a lot of graves, a lot of mason buried in Chutz La'aretz that we're not familiar with, so Midrabanan they declare that any person who walks into Chutz La'aretz by definition is considered to be Tomei. And again, anyone who ever went to a cemetery or went to a funeral is by definition Tomei in the Torah. So if that's the case, so then we're all Tomei Tumas Meis, and the only way to become Tar from Tumas Meis is to undergo the sprinkling of the ashes of Paraduma. We don't have a Paraduma Bizman Hazeh, we haven't had one in close to 2,000 years. Every couple of years they think that they find one somewhere and then it turns out to be a hoax. So Lamais, we have yet to have a Paraduma. So therefore, a person who is Tomei Meis who goes onto the Makom HaMikdash today, according to the Rambam, is Chayev Kares. According to the Ravid, it is not Chayev Kares. La halacha we paskin like the Rambam, the Magen Avraham, and the Mishneh Berurah and the Chos Tisha B'Av both quote the Rambam, and they say that the Rambam was the majority view. Therefore, we assume that Tumas HaMikdash today is an Issur Kares. Those who have the practice of going onto the Makom HaMikdash are basing themselves on the following: they're claiming that those areas that they're claiming that they're walking on are not the Makom HaMikdash proper, not the Azara proper, and therefore, under certain circumstances, those areas would be permitted to be walked on, even by a person who is Tamei Tumas Meis, provided that the person went to the mikveh before to remove other tumas. So again, it's a very questionable discussion, and was interested in my personal opinion on it. I'll be more than happy to tell you about it afterwards, but we're talking about something which is a potentially very, very serious Isser and Isser Kares, just in case you don't think Isser Kares are serious enough, so that's the onus that's reserved for eating chametz on Pesach, eating on Yom Kippur, Chil Shabbos, Avodah Zarah, those are pretty serious level types of Yisurim. So again, those who do have the practice of work on the Mabul Mikdash are basing themselves on something different, but the issue of being Mitamis and Mikdash today is a very, very serious Shaila. So the Chassam Sofer points out that no matter how you slice it.
So I don't understand, this means all of us who are coming can't walk around the Kotel?
No, the Kotel is not the Makom HaMikdash. The Kotel is the wall which was the outer part of the Makom HaMikdash. The Kotel was the wall of the Har HaBayis. So when you're standing in front of the Kotel today, so you're standing chutz the Har HaBayis. If you go past that wall, so then you walk up to the Har HaBayis, which would be a very serious question.
No one is allowed to go there?
So if a person is tummy, technically the halachas is as follows. If a person is tummy tumas meis, they are allowed to go onto the harabayas. If you're tummy tumas meis, you're not allowed to go onto the azara. The azara is a further inner part, the courtyard itself with the base of mikdash. If a person is tummy other types of tumas, then he would not be permitted to go onto the harabayas. But other types of tumas can be removed by going to the mikvah. So those who are advocating, who are permitting going onto the, past the kosa, what they're saying is as follows. We're telling you to go to the mikvah, so therefore it's only an issue of tumas harabayis, and we're telling you we know exactly where the harabayis ends and where the azara begins. So if a person, what? Is it possible to know? That's part of this. That's the root of this controversy. Is it possible to know? Can you really say with such certainty that you know exactly where the azara is? A lot of the discussion revolves around certain assumptions about that area, namely. Do we know for certain where the Kodesh HaKadoshim is? If we knew for certain where the Kodesh HaKadoshim is, then we could just do the math, because the Mishnah and the Mishnayos spell out in the Sefer Midos exactly where everything is. The question is, do we really know for certainty where the Kodesh HaKadoshim is? So there was some who maintained that the rock on the mosque is the Evin HaShiyah, which is the rock that Chazal were referring to as being in the Makom of Kodesh HaKadoshim. There are others who question whether that's really true. That doesn't seem quite to fit the dimensions that the Chazal are describing. So if that's the case, then we really have we're somewhat clueless as to where to draw our lines. So again, this is the root of the controversy as to whether you would be permitted to walk in certain places. For many people, many poskim were of the opinion that one should not walk past the kosel, because once up into the kosel, so we have a misora that that's permitted to walk. But once you go past the kosel, then we're not really sure. We're somewhat in the dark as to whether that's the azor or whether that's the harabai. So that's what many poskim were strongly opposed to walking past the kosel. So again, so comes the Chassam Sofer and says, this discussion is a very important halachic discussion in terms of Kedushas HaMikdash, vis-a-vis the question of Adam Tamei. But does this mean to say that the Makom HaMikdash is not Choshev as Manazah? Does this mean to say that it's not the Makom Meheri Rabban HaMikdash, that's where the next place of Mikdash is going to be? Does that mean to say that's not the place of Akeres Yitzchok, that's the place of the Zesha Ar Shemayim? Of course that's true, as Manazah. There's no question that the Makom HaMikdash is the most special place in the world. The question is there a technical Isser, their ice of going to the state of Tumas? That's a Pilpul of Machlech Yisrael and Raivet, etc. So the same models you have for Eretz Yisrael, that we shouldn't confuse the two issues. There's technical halachic issues of Kedushas HaAretz, for Shemitah, which means Emaisis, their ice, their abundant, etc. And then there's the significance of Eretz Yisrael as the place, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shechinah, the Eretz and Acheres. So that, of course, exists for Zman HaZeh. Sometimes there's a confusion in terms of when halacha and politics mix. Politics usually don't mix too well. There are very few things in the world that mix well with politics. Today's been politics day in NYU, but sometimes there's a lot of confusion in this area when people think that rabbanim, those gedolim, those individuals who had issues with certain aspects of the politics of Eretz Yisrael, that means that they're necessarily anti-Eretz Yisrael. That's a terrible statement. Nobody in the world a lot of people in the world, but no Shomer Torah Mitzvos is anti-Eretz Yisrael. That's a stira minei ubei. Doesn't matter where you are on the political spectrum, whether you accept Medina Yisrael as being a positive thing, whether you hold that it's not a positive thing, whether you're an anti, whatever you hold about the politics of the Medina, so that in no shape or form means that a person is anti-Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael, you can't be anti-Eretz Yisrael and be a Shomer Torah Mitzvos. You're anti one of the mitzvahs of the Torah. You're anti a whole theme of the Torah. You're anti the bracha, the haftachat Am Avinu. So that's an absurdity. What the issue is exactly, why you find Adi Yamazan, that there are some individuals who looked upon the Hakamas HaMedina as a very positive thing, and there are others who looked upon it as either a negative thing or a neutral thing. So we have to get a little bit of a better understanding in order to understand and appreciate the position that that we take on this issue. So one has to just take a look at the issue and see what exactly were the issues, what were the halachic / machshava issues that went into this controversy, and try to see how this affects us today. So there is a Gemara in Maseches Ksuvos that the truth is that most people probably never even heard of this Gemara until about 200 years ago or so, 100 years ago or so. The Gemara at the end of Maseches Ksuvos, which happens to speak about the Shevach of Eretz Yisrael, two blot at the end of Maseches Ksuvos that speak about the tremendous significance of living in Eretz Yisrael. That's many of the Mamar Chazal that we quote about the significance of Eretz Yisrael come from those two last two dafim of Maseches Ksuvos. The reason why the Gemara is even talking about that in Ksuvos of all places is because the very last mission Ksuvos talks about, if you have a discussion, you have an argument between a husband and a wife, the husband claims he wants to live in Eretz Yisrael, the wife says she doesn't want to live in Eretz Yisrael, or vice versa. So now the couple are going to get divorced over this. It's a terrible thing. They can't get their act together. They're going to get divorced. So is the husband obligated to give the wife a ksuba or not? So basically the theme of the Mishnah and the theme of the last two blot of ksubas is that whichever party claims that they want to live in Eretz Yisrael is always in the right. The person who wants to live in Chutz Lars is always in the wrong. That's what the Mishnah says. So if the husband demands that he wants to live in Eretz Yisrael and she says no, so she loses her ksuba, because as a general rule, when a woman gets married, so she's entitled to her ksuba. If the husband dies or divorces her, she's entitled to her ksuba, unless she's the one who breaks down the marriage. So let's say, for argument's sake, a couple's married and the woman is mezana. She becomes an eshes zinsa. So now the husband has to divorce her. She's not going to get a ksuba. She's the one who is responsible for the breakup of the marriage. So even if she's not responsible in such a dramatic way, if she's doing things, she's acting in ways that are inappropriate. Say a couple gets married, and they get married, the Shema Torah mitzvah, and then 20 years later she decides she doesn't want to be firm anymore. So she says, I'm not eating kosher anymore, I'm not keeping Shabbos anymore. So it's going to be very difficult for them to live together. So if the husband divorces her, he doesn't have to give her a ksuba. She's the one who is breaking the halacha. So the Mishnah gives us an example of this also, that the husband says he wants to live in Eretz Yisrael, and the wife says she doesn't want to live in Eretz Yisrael. So the Mishnah says that the husband's right. So she's the one who's acting shelo kedin, because every Jew is supposed to be living in Eretz Yisrael. Or vice versa. If the wife says she wants to live in Eretz Yisrael, the husband says he doesn't want to live in Eretz Yisrael, so then the Mishnah says the wife is right, so she's entitled to be divorced, she's entitled to receive her ksuba. So the theme of that whole last two blot in Maseches Ksuvos is that the one who wants to live in Eretz Yisrael is always the one who is right. There is a very cryptic, controversial Tosfos that appears in the end of Maseches Ksuvos, where Tosfos claims that perhaps, according to those who claim that this is an authentic statement of Tosfos, there are some who question whether Tosfos actually wrote this, but it appears, at least in the print in Arat Tosfosim, that perhaps this din doesn't apply Bizman HaZeh. Why doesn't it apply Bizman HaZeh? So it's quoted in the name of one of the Balei Tosfos, Reb Chaim Cohen. Reb Chaim Cohen said that Bizman HaZeh, it was too dangerous to travel to Eretz Yisrael. Let's not forget when the Balei Tosfos lived in the day in the Middle Ages, right smack in the time of the Crusades. So Reb Chaim Cohen writes that for a husband to demand of his wife to go move to Eretz Yisrael Bizman HaZeh, or vice versa, is unrealistic. You're talking about a time of Crusades, you're talking about a time when to travel the roads of Europe was mamash life-threatening. So that whole sugya maybe doesn't apply Bizman HaZeh. Then to make matters worse, Reb Chaim Cohen said, is that the situation in Eretz Yisrael in the 1100s was such a disaster, was such an economic impossibility, that it was kimat not shayach to fulfill the mitzvah for his baritz. You think Shemitah was hard as Manazeh? Yeah, such so tough to keep Trumas and Maishas with Manazeh. You go into any store and you buy their food, has 16 different Ashkachas on it, whether you like the Ashkach or don't like the Ashkach. It's not so hard to keep Mitzvah plus Baras with Manazeh. Whereas in the Middle Ages, the Rishonim, right, it was chamamish impossible. The Jews went, there was no food, there was no nothing. They were living in, the Christians and the Muslims were killing each other in the middle of the Crusades, and the Jews were caught in the middle. So it was not Shaykh to fulfill the Mitzvahs properly there. So therefore, Tosfos writes that they throw into question whether that Mishnah really applies, whether that whole Sugin Ksuvos even applies. Bizman HaZeh. Whether or not Tosfos actually wrote that, of course, that's totally irrelevant for Bizman HaZeh. Whatever, if Tosfos was saying that temporarily that Mishnah didn't apply, it doesn't mean L'dori D'oris it doesn't apply. It means in each generation, the Chacham have to evaluate and see whether it's realistic to live in Eretz Yisrael. So Baruch Hashem, it's realistic to live in Eretz Yisrael, Bizman HaZeh. Baruch Hashem, you could fulfill the mitzvah, place Baruch Bizman HaZeh. Baruch Hashem, there are no crusaders anymore. So there are tzaras, a lot of places in the world. But Baruch Hashem, with the words of Tosfos, clearly wouldn't be true, Bizman HaZeh. Anyway, get back to the story. So in the middle of that sugya and ksuvos, the Gemara throws at us the following statement. The Gemara is commenting on psukim in Shir HaShirim, where the Pesukim and Shirashirim describe a series of shvuas that were taken, a series of oaths that were taken. Some of the oaths were taken by Klal Yisrael, and some of the oaths were taken by the Umas HaOlam, by the non-Jewish nations. So the Gemara speaks about what's called the Gimel Shavuos. Gimel Shavuos do not mean the 3 weeks. Some people mistakenly say that. Gimel Shavuos mean the three shavuos that Chazal had a tradition were administered in the world, summoned up to Klal Yisrael, summoned up to the Umas HaOlam at the time of the Churban. Included in the Shavuos were that Klal Yisrael were not going to return en masse to Eretz Yisrael. They weren't going to rebel against the nations of the world. They were going to basically remain in Golos until the nations of the world permitted them to go back to Eretz Yisrael, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was goal of them until the days of Mashiach or whatever is going to precede that. So that was one of the Shavuos that Klal Yisrael took at the time of the Churban. So the question is, what do we make out of that Gemara? What exactly does that Gemara mean for us? So again, for 1700 years or so, nobody really heard of that Gemara. It was a Gemara Tachta Rebbe Masechus Ksubas. It wasn't relevant. No one was going back to Eretz Yisrael en masse. There was no rebellions against the Umas HaOlam, so nobody took the Gemara, without that much relevance at Lamaisa. So this Gemara came back to life about 150 years ago or so, when Zionism was beginning. There was a beginning of a stirring of Jewish people to go, not just one or two Jews to return to Eretz Yisrael. The returning to Jews to Eretz Yisrael, this was something that continued throughout the ages. There were always individual Jews who went to Eretz Yisrael. In the days of the Balei HaTosfos, Rabbeinu Chaim Kohen himself went to Eretz Yisrael. The Rabban went to Eretz Yisrael, the Levi went to Eretz Yisrael, the Rambam went to Eretz Yisrael, the Rambam tried to go to Eretz Yisrael. He lived there for a little while and he couldn't survive in Eretz Yisrael. He ended up going back to Egypt. So,
it was later, right?
So, again, the idea of individual Jews going back to Eretz Yisrael existed throughout the years, but as a movement to get the Jews en masse to go back to Eretz Yisrael, this wasn't practical, it wasn't feasible, it wasn't even in the ballpark. But again, as I'm sure the basic history, so already before Zionism technically started as a political movement, it was already a movement to move back to Eretz Yisrael. There were already groups of Jews who were going back to Eretz Yisrael, and then it picked up a lot of steam in terms of politically at the very end of the 1800s and early 1900s. So the question that was raised by many rabbanim in Europe was, how do we understand this? How should we approach this in light of this Gemara Maseches Ksubas? So there were different approaches to this topic. So there were some gedolim in Europe. Again, just because we disagree with somebody doesn't mean we should take a position lightly. It doesn't mean we should make fun of it. Doesn't mean we should battle it. The same way that we would hope that other positions in Klal Yisrael would respect things that we believe based on Torah sources, so we have to do accordingly. So there were a group of Gedolim in Europe who took this Gemara with the utmost seriousness lahalacha and said that this Gemara is the end of the discussion. It means there's nothing to talk about. You can't even begin to discuss Zionism going back there. So it doesn't matter. It wouldn't matter whether the people who are leading the movement back to Eretz Yisrael are wearing shtreimels. It wouldn't matter whether they're Rosh Yeshivas. It doesn't matter if they're from that. It's irrelevant. And if you take this Gemara at face value, in terms of a halachic statement, that the Gimel Shavuos Mechayev Klal Yisrael to remain in Golos basically until Mashiach comes, so then there's nothing to discuss. So this position was formally taken by some of the forerunners of Satmar. It wasn't actually even called Satmar at the time, but this became known. The strongest supporter of this idea in our generation, not even your generation, you're a little younger than me, but when I was a kid, so the Satmar Rebbe Zatzal was still alive. So the previous Satmar Rebbe, previous already, Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum was the strongest. He was the strongest at this position. Again, he didn't make up his position. He was following from his predecessors already, who held the sway in Europe, and therefore they held that the discussion of Zionism in a state is a non-starter in terms of the Torah. That was one approach that was taken. Again, that approach still exists b'zman hazeh. There are individuals who maintain that approach b'zman hazeh. Many gedolim did not accept that approach. Many gedolim did not feel that the Gemara in Maseches Ksubas should be interpreted or should be applied in the way that was applied by the Satmar Rebbe and some of his predecessors. And the question is, why not? What exactly was the issue? If the Gemara Ksubas does say it, so the question is, before you get into the application of Zman Hazeh, the question is, does that Gemara really mean anything up Halacha? The context of that Gemara is not really a halachic context. The Gemara is a drasha. The Gemara it's a Maimon Chazal interpreting Pesukim Shir HaShirim. And if you look in the Sifrei Halacha, obviously in Shulchan Aruch you're not going to look up this halacha. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't talk about Hilchos living in Eretz Yisrael. Shulchan Aruch wrote things that were relevant to Maisa for him. In fact, there's only one siman in all Shulchan Aruch about Trumas and Maisers. It's a fairly long siman because the Yosef Karev did live in Eretz Yisrael, so he did write a lot about that, relatively speaking, to other people. But it wasn't a halachic burning issue in the 1500s in Tzvat or anywhere else in the world about whether we should encourage all the Jewish people to come back to Eretz Yisrael. Nobody was letting that happen. So the Shulchan Aruch obviously doesn't talk about this topic, but the Rambam talks about everything under the sun. The Rambam talks about things that were relevant l'maisa, will be relevant l'maisa. The Rambam talks about Trumas and Maisas Be'arichos and Tumah V'Tahara and Dinyan Beis HaMikdash and Karbonos. The Rambam talks about every single halacha that could possibly ever apply to Klal Yisrael. And it has been pointed out, the Rambam never quotes this Gemara. The Rambam never incorporates this into the world of halacha, which led some to believe that this is not a halachic statement. This is a Medrash of Chazal. We take Midrashim seriously also, but we don't pass Mishailas based on Midrashim. So this is not a halachically binding statement, so then we don't have to be as concerned with this issue. There were other Gedolim in Europe who said that, in theory, this may have been a halachic statement, but it's irrelevant for Zman Hazeh for the following reason. That if you look in the Gemara at the end of Maseches Ksubos, so the Gemara speaks about Klal Yisrael, in a sense, swearing they're not going to rebel against the nations of the world. They're not going to go up en masse and, you know, conquer Eretz Yisrael, you know, as a revolution. So there were Gedolim in Europe who pointed out that's not exactly what happened. It means the development of Zionism, the development of how it played out politically, was by far not a revolution. The Yor Sameach, one of the Gedolim Yisrael at the time, the Yor Sameach, the Mishnah Chochma, the Yor Sameach. So after 1917, after the Balfour Declaration, so everyone knows some basic elementary history. So after World War I, so Eretz Yisrael at the time passed the ownership from the Turks to the British. They've been under the Turks for the last 300 years or so. And when the British were on the winning team in World War I, so they took over at the time what was called the Palestine. So when it came under the control of the British, there was already a presence of Jews there. And there were some people who were able to get the promise / assurance, whatever you want to call it, called the Balfour Declaration, where Lord Balfour, British, I think he was the Prime Minister, not thinking, right? He was the Prime Minister at the time. Balfour himself was the Prime Minister, the Prime Minister, something. He was the Prime Minister, no? No, he was the Prime Minister, he was the Prime Minister. Prime Minister, what was he? He was the Prime Minister, the Prime Minister, right? Prime Minister. What?
Minister
of something, okay. Whatever it was. Anyway, kids, whoever he was, he wrote the famous Balfour Declaration. And basically, which said that His Majesty's government looks favorably upon the creating of a homeland for the Jewish people in Palestine at the time. Sure, that was the thrust of it. So after that document was published, the Yosef Meach said, he said, so that's not the Gemara Ksuba is talking about. The Gemara Ksuba says, we can't go in arms and go in and fight the British and grab it away from them. They said they're going to give it to us. So that's called Lashla Yimru Yalu B'chayma. That's called Lashla Yimru Dubumas. That's not B'chla what the Gemara is talking about. So the Yosef Meach thought that...
It's part of the... most of the nation, the Arabs, the Arab League,
they... Right, but they weren't the Bible on it. They didn't own it at the time. At the time...
But is the Gemara talking about ownership?
I don't know. So then... Later, after the Yosef Meach was lifted in the 1920s, so then later many poskim went along that same line of reasoning. When 1947, when it was put to a vote in front of the Umos HaOlam, the entire world voted on it. So the world voted on it, and majority rules. Hiram Atos. So it wasn't even a close vote. It was pretty much the entire world, with the exception of the Arab countries, and so one or two other countries, that voted against the formation of a state, the original partition plan to form a state in Israel. So it was supposed to be, the original plan was supposed to be a Jewish state and an Arab state. The Arabs didn't accept the partition plan, so they're still out of MSS, still trying. Now all of a sudden, 50 years later, they realize maybe it wouldn't have been so bad for them to have the partition plan. They should have woken up 50 years ago. That's when they wouldn't have been have such sorrows for the last 50 years. But anyway, getting back to the story. So that's what many rabbanim said, following in the Yosef Meach's understanding that once the Umos HaOlam agreed to it, so then the Gemara Ksubis becomes meaningless b'zman hazeh. So that's not a violation of the Gemara Ksubis, that we didn't go against the Umos HaOlam fakir. We got their permission, they voted on it. So again, for a variety of reasons, many, many poskim, perhaps most of the rabbanim, were not really as concerned with the issue of the Gimel Shavuos as the Satmar Rebbe and other camp of Gedolim was. one shouldn't mistakenly think, therefore, just because a person doesn't accept the Gemara Shvuah, so any Rav in any place, any time Chacham in Europe, who didn't go the route of the Sama Rebbe, necessarily was the greatest supporter of certain things that were going on in Europe in terms of Zionism. There were different issues. There were Machshava issues and halachic issues, and there were secular and religious issues. Again, there were a lot of other things that were into this big chul, into this big kugel about those who are religious Zionists and not religious Zionists and non-Zionists and secular Zionists. There was a lot of things going on. And again, the point of today's shiur is not a history of Zionism, but just from the pure halachic point of view. So that issue that was raised by those who claimed that the Gimel Shvuos was a serious issue, and in a sense is an impediment, in effect closes the issue of any discussion of a state. So that particular position was not accepted by many Rabbanim for a variety of reasons, some of the reasons that we said up until now. So if one is going to take the approach that there's nothing intrinsically, quote-unquote, usher about the idea of setting up a state in Israel, so now the question becomes, is it a good thing? So, l'chora, it's a wonderful thing, it's a gavaldika thing. How it plays out, l'maisa, in terms of how is it going to be run, are there pros and are there cons, are there pluses, are there minuses, you know, everything in life is like that. So every situation in life has some good parts and some not such good parts. But b'ikaron, the idea that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the opportunity to have a state that could protect the Klal Yisrael, a state where Torah could flourish, a state where Klal Yisrael can call their own, so that's intrinsically a wonderful thing. How it plays out, okay? So they're going to be different. They're going to be different nuances. People are going to have different opinions about how it plays out. But the ikaron, the basic yisod, is l'fianias naita. I don't speak on behalf of myself. Is a wonderful, phenomenal thing that we should have tremendous hakaras hatov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for. So not only should we have hakaras hatov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu just for the entity of a state, but the way history played out in terms of the events that went into the creation of the state, so there was a tremendous Yeshua for Klal Yisrael. And we know that in time and time again, so the Jewish people have been, literally their lives have been on the line, that in the events preceding the first Yom HaTzmut, in those first few months of the year 1948, and then the weeks following the very first Yom HaTzmut, so we know that the lives of hundreds of thousands of people were hanging in the balance. Not to mention the fact that many of those people whose lives were hanging in the balance were people who had just survived the Holocaust. So clearly there was a tremendous, tremendous Yeshua that took place for Klal Yisrael, the events surrounding 1948, a twofold Yeshua. A Yeshua in the sense that it was a positive development in the history of Klal Yisrael to be able to have this, to have a state. And again, obviously coming on the heels of the Holocaust, this took on a whole new dimension. And just practically the fact that there was a tremendous Yeshua in terms of just Jewish lives that was spared that in the attack of the Arab world against the new state. So the question is, now that if one is taking this approach that we're advocating, that this is a tremendous Yeshua, in a sense, a double Yeshua, the question is, how do we respond to that? What is that correct halachic response when HaKadosh Baruch Hu performs these kinds of Yeshuas for us? He performs these kinds of salvations. So how are we supposed to approach that? So the Gemara tells us in Maseches Megillah, on Daf Yud Aleph, that this was not the first time in the history of the Jewish people that HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed a tremendous Yeshua for them. So the Gemara tells us that one of the main salvations that occurred for Klal Yisrael in our history was at the time of Mordechai Esther. And the Gemara says that Chazal at that time weren't sure what is the proper response. How should we respond to a tremendous Yeshua that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us? And again, it was a little bit of a different Yeshua than here. There, the Gemara says that there was no real political Yeshua. It means they were still slaves to Achashverosh, even after the events of Mordechai Esther. They were still at the whim of a non-Jewish government. But there was a tremendous Yeshua, there was a tremendous saving of lives. So how and what is the correct halachic response? So the Gemara says that Chazal weren't sure, and Chazal were very concerned to institute some new kind of a celebration, to say Hallel, to read the Megillah, to make parties, to make a Suda, to make a Yom Tov. What was bothering Chazal? Because we know there are 613 mitzvahs that were given to Klal Yisrael, and we're not really supposed to add on anymore. There's an issue of Bal Tosif. You're not supposed to add on new mitzvahs to the Torah. You're supposed to, Kadosh Baruch gave us the mitzvahs. Let's keep the mitzvahs that were given to us. So the Gemara says that Chazal were hemming and hawing at the time of the events of Purim. Should we institute a new Yomtov? Should we institute new mitzvahs to commemorate the Nisim? So finally the Gemara says that Chazal realized that this would not be a violation of Al-Tosif. This would not be a violation of adding on to the mitzvahs of Torah. Because we're not really adding on to the mitzvahs of Torah. We are just applying a pre-existing Torah concept. What's the pre-existing Torah concept? We just finished celebrating a few weeks ago the Yomtov of Pesach. So Pesach, we celebrate Yetzias Mitzrayim. So in the greater scheme of things, what was a greater Yeshua? Was the greater Yeshua the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim? Was the greater Yeshua the events of Purim? So even though in terms of Beis Nigla, Yetzias Mitzrayim was more, but in terms of the stakes were much higher than the days of Purim. In the days of Purim, if Chalil v'Chalil, the Nes of Purim wouldn't have happened, so then we wouldn't be sitting here today, the entire Jewish people would have been wiped out. In the days of Mitzrayim, if Kriyas Yamsuf wouldn't have happened, so then we'd still be building pyramids to power in Egypt. We'd still be Avodim. The power didn't want to kill us. At the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, he had no interest in killing the Jewish people. Klai Yisrael were afraid they were going to get killed, but power had no interest in killing them. He wanted to bring them back and have them keep on building pyramids for him. So the Yeshua, the salvation, was much greater in the days of Purim. So says the Gemara Kal v'Chomer. When we were saved just from being slaves, we have to celebrate by singing, by praising, by saying Hallel. We say Hallel in Pesach. Az Yashem Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu sang the greatest form of Hallel by singing Az Yashem Moshe. So Mimisa L'chayim L'kol Shekein. How much more so are we required to celebrate when the Kadosh Baruch Hu provides us with his salvation, which is literally an issue of life and death? So it's based on this Kal v'Chomer that Chazal finally instituted the Yontif of Purim. In fact, the Ritva on that sugya writes that the same Shaila came up again in the days of Chanukah. What right do we have to institute a new Yontif of Chanukah? So the Ritva says, well, they had already had a precedent, the same way they instituted Purim, so they instituted Chanukah also. So there is a big machlekes acharonim, how to learn Pshat of this Gemara. What does this mean when the Gemara says that this man is there? So we celebrate Purim, or the extension of the Rishonim say we celebrate Chanukah just as they celebrated Pesach, just as they said Shiras Hayam, they said Az Yashem Moshe, so too we say Hallel on Chanukah, we read the Megillah on Purim, we celebrate Shalom Bon, Asud, etc. How do we understand Pshat? So the Chasam Sofer writes in one of his Shuvas that what the Gemara means is that this is a real Torah commandment. This is a mitzvah min haTorah to always be makar tov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when he performs nisim that save our lives. When you have a gavaldik Yeshua that affects the whole community here, the whole community of Klal Yisrael, so we have a Torah obligation to celebrate. We are not permitted just to sit back and not acknowledge when HaKadosh Baruch Hu performs a nis in our behalf. Forget we're mechuyif to celebrate, we're mechuyif to sing, say challah, whatever the case may be. So Chassam Sefer writes that this is the source for a practice that existed in Europe. They used to call these the mini Purims. They used to have different communities that had mini Purims, which would celebrate different events that occurred in that community, different miraculous events. There was a famous Purim de Frankfurt, that there was some big nace that happened to the Jewish community in Frankfurt at one point. I don't anyone know the history, what it was? I don't remember what it was exactly. But there was some kind of a big nace, and Chassam Sefer writes, therefore in Frankfurt, until this day, Chassam Sefer was actually born in Frankfurt. Chassam Sofer writes that until his day, so and even after that, the Jews of Frankfurt would have this mini day of Purim. They would celebrate, they would commemorate the Nisim that occurred. Yet other communities had their own private Purims. So Chassam Sofer writes that this is a proper practice, and this is rooted in the Gemara Maseches Megillah. When a big Nes occurs to a group of Klal Yisrael, they're not supposed to just forget it, just to live life as business as usual. But the Torah requires of them to celebrate. Chassam Sofer goes on to say that therefore the celebration of Purim and Chanukah today is a mitzvah min haTorah. Now, it doesn't mean that the details of how you celebrate are mitzvahs min haTorah. Kriyas HaMegillah was instituted by the Chachamim, and lighting there is Chanukah was instituted by the Chachamim. But the Ikaron, the principle of celebration, that's a guiding principle, that's something that applies on a level of the Raisas. Therefore, the Chassam Sofer writes that if a person goes the whole day of Purim and doesn't do anything, no Kriyas HaMegillah, no Alan Nisim, no Suda, no Shavuot, nothing, no acknowledgement of the Nes whatsoever, he not only has he not fulfilled the mitzvahs, the Rabbanon of Megillah and Shalachmanes, Matan HaSavyonim, etc., but he hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah, the Araisa, of Az Yashem Moshe, of celebrating events of a Nes. The Netziv disagrees with the Chassam Sofer. The Netziv writes that he thinks there's a difference between a Shas HaNes itself, in contrast to future celebrations. The year itself that the miracle occurs, as the miracle is unfolding in front of your eyes, so that's for sure a mitzvah d'oraisa. That Chassam Sofer is right about. But the fact that we celebrate in subsequent years, that we say Hal and Hanukkah 2,000 years later, we have a Sud on Purim 2,500 years later, that argues that Netziv is only midirabbanan. So the Netziv says there are two different types of halal. There's a halal b'shas anes, that's a halal d'araisa, and then there's a halal which is a zeichel anes, which is only a halal d'rabbanan. We even spoke about this a little bit on Pesach. Well, we mentioned this. Did we mention this? But that's the yisod that the Netziv says. He says this in his Haggadah. The Netziv says that the halal that we say in Chanukah is only a halal d'rabbanan, but the halal that we say at the Seder is a halal d'araisa. Since b'chol dor v'dor chayav adam l'rosatzuk liyotz mitzrayim, since Pesach night requires of us to re-experience tzias mitzrayim, so l'fika chanach v'chayam l'hodus l'halal. Therefore, the halal that we say on Pesach night is a different halal. It's elevated to be a halal d'arais. It's a halal b'shas hanes. So again, so a fundamental machlokes between the Chasam Sofer and the Netziv in terms of what is our obligation in terms of response to nes. What is the proper halachic response to a miracle? So the Chasam Sofer says that the proper halachic response in each and every generation is to commemorate, is to remember events, miraculous events, even if thousands of years ago, and that's a chiyuv min haTorah. According to the Netziv, no. The chiyuv d'arais is only b'shas anes, when the miracle happens. The fact that there's an obligation of future years, that's only midirabbanan. It's in fact, if you look at the Lashon HaGemara, Masechta Shabbos, when the Gemara describes the miracle of Chanukah, so the Gemara says that Lashon HaAcheres Kavim Yom Tov HaHalav HaHodoyah, that the next year or a later year, they establish the days of Chanukah. According to Netziv, that makes a lot of sense. The first Chanukah, you don't need the Chacham to establish it. It's obvious. The miracle just happened. We were just saved from the Yavanim. Of course you have to celebrate the Yom Tov. Of course you have to say Halakha. Of course you have to do something. Next year you have to work out the details. Should we be Misakan Yom Tov or not? The same is in Purim also. If you look at the Megillah, describes the very first Purim. No one had to tell them to celebrate. It was, of course you celebrate. It was Lashon HaCheres, the next year, Vatichtov, the following year. Then they were pilpuling. Should we have a Yom Tov? Should we not have a Yom Tov? So this machlek is the Chasam Sofer, and then it's Siv Lefiyani Yas Daiti has very serious ramifications in terms of what one's response is to the miraculous events of 1948. Again, we're working with the assumption that the events of 1948 were positive. They were miraculous on two fronts. They were positive because just the very essence of a Jewish state is a positive development. And they were especially positive because of the fact that, Baruch Hashem, there was such a Yeshua that the small Jewish community was able to be misgaber, were able to be victorious in the Muhammad HaShachur. So we're looking at it as a very, very positive development. Now the question is, what does that obligate us? What exactly should our response to those positive developments be? So Lefianias Daiti, this ultimately revolves around this machloek is the Chasam Sofer and the Netziv. So according to the position of the Chasam Sofer, we have this Gevaldige Yeshua of Mimisa L'chaim, who is literally Mimisa L'chaim, because we can only begin to imagine what would have happened if the Jews would have lost the war in 1948. So a tremendous Yeshua Mimisa L'chaim. What are you supposed to do? So according to Chasam Sofer, there's a Torah obligation to respond in some shape or form. The details, how to do it, what the nuances of what the response is, that's not min haTorah. But there's got to be something. You have to have some akaras haTov, you have to have some type of a celebration, some kind of a acknowledgement that the Kadosh Baruch Hu performed the Tovos for Klal Yisrael. How that acknowledgement plays out, so that's up to the Sanhedrin, the days of the Purim, the days of Chanukah to be Keveya. But the fact that you have to have some kind of a celebration, so that's a din that's binding min haTorah, that's Oz Yoshe Moshe. According to Netziv, that's not true. According to Netziv, that very first year, 1948 itself, when they realized the miracles that had occurred, so then there was a chi of min haTorah to acknowledge it. The fact that every year to do something to remember those miracles, so the Netziv says that would only be midirabban, that wouldn't be min haTorah. Ma'naf kemina, whether it's deraisa midirabban, all the difference in the world. If something is a chi of min haTorah, then we don't need a Beis Din to formally institute it. We don't need Beis Din to tell me to wear tefillin. We don't need Beis Din to tell me to keep Shabbos. The Torah says to do these things. So according to Chasam Sofer, if there's a chi of min haTorah to acknowledge miracles, even miracles of the past, so then I don't need a Beis Din to institute it. I don't need a Chachamim to tell me to do it. It's muvan me'elav. It's understood that I have to do it. But according to the Netziv, if it's a din mid derabbanan, because min haTorah it only applies b'shas anes, if it's only a din mid derabbanan, so that a din derabbanan requires an authorization of a Beis Din, requires a Beis Din HaGadol, requires a Sanhedrin. We don't have a Sanhedrin today. For whatever technical halachic reasons, we don't have a Sanhedrin. So according to the Netziv, we can't make up new din mid derabbanan, so then we really wouldn't have any obligation to do anything. means it wouldn't be also to do anything, but it wouldn't really be an obligation according to the Nitziv, because it's not a it wouldn't have the tokef of a base in Agadol. So Lefiri is Naiti, just literally purely from the halachic vantage point, what should our approach be towards the acknowledgement, how to be Meshabech HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the events in 1948, and a similar question, of course, for 1967, but right now we're talking about Yom HaTzmut. So Lefiri is Naiti, according to Chassam Sofer, there's a Torah obligation to acknowledge it. According to the Nitziv, there's no Torah obligation, and by default, there's no rabbinical or obligation either, because we don't have dinim derabbanan that are instituted yesh me'ayim bizman hazeh. So usually, when we the type of celebration, the type of acknowledgement that we associate with miraculous events is hallel. That's what the Gemara says in Maseches Megillah, that we really should be saying hallel and Purim also, and just technical reasons why we don't. Because the miracle wasn't complete, because there was still Avodim Tachashverosh, or the miracle didn't take place in Eretz Yisrael, so it wasn't a complete miracle in some way, or the Kriyas HaMegillah substitutes for the Hallel. So there are a lot of very, very technical reasons why we don't say Hallel on Purim, but the Ikaron, fundamentally, Purim and Chanukah really should be celebrated in the same way. They should both be celebrated with Hallel. Hallel is the expression of Hakaras HaTov for Nisim. So if you just put all the, connect all the dots, it would appear that according to the Chassam Sofer, Hallel would be the appropriate response to the miraculous events of Yom HaTzmut. Again, this is working with the assumption that these are good events, these are miraculous events, these are positive developments. If you deny those premises, so then there's obviously nothing to discuss in terms of our development of the Shia. But working with the assumption that all those things are positive and miraculous, and therefore warrant some kind of a halachic response, so according to Chassam Sofer, look over the correct halachic response would be Hallel. According to Nitziv, that's not true. According to Nitziv, there's no response. There's no halachic response because it's not Shasaneis and there's no Dinder Abonim Bizman Hazeh, there's no Sanhedrin anymore. So then there wouldn't be a recitation of Hallel. So, Lefiyani Yazdaiti, again, I can only present you what I think is my opinion. Lefiyani Yazdaiti, the issue whether one is obligated to say Hallel on these days ultimately boils down to this machlokes Chassam Sofer in the Nitziv. How do we, quote unquote, how do we pask it in the Shaila? It's very hard to be Mechariah, such a Shaila, to Chassam Sofer in the Nitziv, too good early Olam. I think we should treat it like any other area of halacha that we're not sure about. We treat it as a sveika d'dina. So what do you do when you have a suffik? When you have a suffik d'araisa? So you perform the mitzvah. You have nothing to lose by performing the mitzvah. Anything, if anything, you have something to gain. But to recite a bracha is a little bit shaky, because to recite a bracha means that you're really convinced that you're mechuyav meikra din to recite this hallel. According to Nitziv, I don't think that's true. According to Nitziv, you're not mechuyav to recite that. According to Chassam Sofer, maybe you're mechuyav to, but not according to Nitziv. So therefore, Lefiyani Yazdaiti, the more correct psak in this area is that in these days one should recite Hallel, albeit without a bracha, because we're not 100% sure. We're not 100% sure that the really correct halachic response that's required by the halacha is Hallel. We don't know. So we're going to say the Hallel, but we're not going to recite the bracha because we don't have a base in the Bizman Hazeh to be Misakein and this Hallel. That's Lefiyani's Naiti, what the correct halachic approach should be. Now again, this whether one does recite the Hallel, one recites it with the bracha, one recites without a bracha, whatever your different permutations are, if a person goes with the assumptions that we started the Shia with, that these are positive developments, and these are miraculous developments, and these are things that require Hakaras HaTov to Kadosh Baruch Hu, so then that should be our response. Our response should be a tremendous Hakaras HaTov to Kadosh Baruch Hu. How that plays out in the halachic world of with Hallel, with a bracha, Hallel Sholem, before davening, after davening, middle of davening, those are details. Those are interesting halachic details, but those are details. The fact that we Lefiyani Yazdaiti, that we're required to have a tremendous amount of Hakaras HaTov to Kadosh Baruch Hu for 1948 and for 1967 and all the years before and after and in between, Ad HaYom HaZeh, so that I think is a given. Again, everyone takes the approach of Satma and that approach that it's a negative thing. Okay, so we're not going with that route right now. But if you take the approach that it's basically a positive thing, so then it requires a tremendous Hakaras HaTov to Kadosh Baruch Hu. You know, we very often in life we take things for granted, things that we have, you know, that we grow up with, that we're used to, so we take for granted. So just if you stop for a minute and think, the unbelievable Chasdei Hashem that we have, it's lo yuman ki yisupar, the tremendous Chasdei Hashem that we have there. So, you know, if we're so spoiled by it, we're so used to it, that a guy wants to go to Israel, so what does he do? He hops on a plane, 9.5 hours later, Sean, he's there, 45 minutes later, he's standing by the coast already. What we accomplish in less than 12, what you could accomplish from leaving your door of your house to get to the Makom Mikdash in less than 12 hours is something that was a lifelong dream of millions and millions of Jews who never got anywhere near that dream. Hailing of Vilna Gaon never got near that dream. The Chavetz Chaim never got near that dream. Chaim only lived not that long ago. People for thousands of years would have given everything in the world to be able to go to Eretz Yisrael for 1 minute. Moshe Rabbeinu, we want to go to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't have that dream, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us that dream. Not only do we have that ability to run off to Eretz Yisrael just like that, but we have the opportunity to learn Torah in Eretz Yisrael. To learn Torah in Eretz Yisrael. So, hello, you want Kiyasubar. Yeshivas, you have your choice of 500 different yeshivas. It's something which is unheard of, something which is for 2,000 years, Mamash didn't exist. So that's something that in and of itself is a tremendous Hakaras Hatov. And the acknowledgement, knowing how difficult the last 100 years have been for Klal Yisrael, to appreciate the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a little bit of Yeshua at the most difficult, darkest time in our history. So that in and of itself is something which should fill us with a tremendous Hakaras Hatov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Does it mean there aren't problems? A lot of things are problems. A lot of things. You know, even Baruch Hashem, a person gets married, he has a wonderful, wonderful marriage. Every marriage has a little bit of a rough edge. Every relationship, everything has a little bit of problems here and there. But for the most part, for the 99.99% of the time, everything is gewaltig, everything is meyerdig, everything is a dream come true. So that's what our approach should be there. It's Rav Zman Hazeh. It sort of appears to me that it should be, it's mamish, it's, there are more things that have to get done. We hope and pray that Hashem Baruch Hu should continue to shower us with this chesed and watch over Eretz Yisrael and watch over the Medina and guide it in the proper path. But the fact that we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that it's a tremendous source of Hakaras Hatov. So just to conclude, you know, if you're interesting, just to get a perspective in terms of what we have to be appreciative of Bizman Hazeh. So the Ramban, as mentioned before, the Ramban at the age of 70 went to Eretz Yisrael. He went to Eretz Yisrael because he was kicked out of Spain. Because he won a debate, they put him up to debate against members of the church, and the Ramban won the debate hands down. So his reward for winning the debate was they threw him out of the country. So he would have that was good because they didn't kill him. So they threw him out of the country. And at the age of 70, he came to Eretz Yisrael. So the Ramban arrives in Eretz Yisrael, and he comes to Yerushalayim, and there's no minyan. I don't mean that he missed the last Ma'ariv and Zichur Moshe at 3 o'clock in the morning. There was no minyan. There weren't 10 Jews who lived in Yerushalayim. They had to make it before Rosh Hashanah. They had to bring in from Shechem, I think they wanted to go figure out, bring from Shechem, a Jew from Shechem, a Jew from Hebron or something, to make a minyan, the Ramban should have a minyan for the Yom Noraim. That was Eretz Yisrael in the Middle Ages, for the most part. That was the Eretz Yisrael that Tosfos is referring to, that it was too dangerous to go. I said, so look at the picture, look at it before and after, look at the Eretz Yisrael that we have today. Baruch Hashem, you can find more than a minyan at any time of day and night, at any place in Eretz Yisrael. Look at the difference, look at the tremendous chesed that Kadosh Baruch Hu has bestowed upon us. So again, we hope and pray that Kadosh Baruch Hu should continue to watch over Eretz Yisrael, continue to guide Eretz Yisrael in the proper way, and we should hope and pray that this should be the beginning, this should be the whatever you want to call it. You want to call it Schalpig, not a Schalpig, you want to say Reishis, Shetei Reishis, don't get bogged down in the details. Just hope and pray that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should continue the process, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should continue to bless us, and we should be able to come to the point where we'll be zoichet to see the Gula Shleim.